In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress, and on today's show, we're going to be talking with writer Brian Azzarello. We talk about the wrap-up to 100 Bullets. He finished it up with Eduardo Risso this year. We also discuss Filthy Rich, the Vertigo crime novel that was drawn by Victor Santos. Brian talks about their collaboration, how he first met them, and the project in general. We also talk about some future projects like First Wave, the DC Pulp Hero crossover that starts in November, which leads off with the Batman Doc Savage crossover drawn by Phil Noto, and then followed up by the miniseries that will be written by Brian and drawn by Rags Morales. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Whether it's major story arcs in hardback, trade paperbacks, archive editions, absolute editions, omnibuses, you name it, you'll find them at InStockTrades.com and at discounts of 35% or more off the cover price. Case in point, good selections from Brian Azzarello. For instance, Filthy Rich, the Vertigo crime novel with Victor Santos. The standard retail price is $19.99, but at InStockTrades.com, you can get it for $12.59. Volumes of 100 Bullets that retail for $19.99, again at InStockTrades.com, $12.59. You'll find books like Loveless, Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, the Dr. 13 miniseries that he did with Cliff Chang. That book, $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.44. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, for all your pre-ordered monthly comic book needs. More details, go to their websites, InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Well, I want to talk about Filthy Rich to start off.
Sure.
First, was this planned to be just a graphic novel?
It was always meant to be exactly what you have in your hand right now. Actually, no, let me take that back. It was never meant to be a hardcover.
Really?
Yeah, that came later.
I'm pleased to see, because I was kind of concerned with it being, you know, smaller than an average book. I understand from a book selling, you know, standpoint, whatever was necessary for the art, it seems to fit the book, and, you know, everything looks good to me.
Yeah, to me too. I'm really happy with it.
It looks great, man. And also, you always find these very interesting artists. And again, is that you or is that Will that found the artist?
No. I've been trying to work with Victor for years. I actually brought Victor to this project. So,
how'd you find his stuff?
I met Victor years ago at a convention in Spain, Vilis. I believe it was like 2002, maybe 2003, I don't remember. And we hit it off, and you know, it was just a matter of finding the right project and, you know, the time. At the beginning, I wasn't involved in the crime line. And I was in Spain at the Barcelona convention, and hooked up with Victor again, and he's like, I really want to work with you. I was like, yeah, you know, they got something going over at Vertigo. It's like, maybe we can do something. So jumped from there.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
what?
I know. So, you know, my stories are not interesting.
What examples of his work did you see?
Oh, God, he sends me everything he's done. I have a stack of his stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of genres has he done?
He's done noir. He's done fantasy, like with elves and shit, swords.
Okay. Had you heard of the writers that he worked with, like, for example, in his noir stuff?
He'd actually worked, he writes most of his own stuff.
Okay. Tell me do you know what they, you know, editorial thought and in picking Filthy Rich as part of the Vertigo crime line?
Well, there were some things that made it perfect, but we won't get into them. it was a perfect storm, you know. Everything sort of just, like, came crashing down around everyone at once. It's like, all right, we'll do it for the crime line.
Well, it's cool because, one, I mean, you were always given, it seems, a free rein in 100 Bullets in terms of being as violent as you need to, as sexy as you need to, or whatever. And I'm glad to see that this book is no exception.
Well, you know, write what you know.
Attaboy. Well, that's all right. This is a good kind of introduction to your style for people who haven't tried 100 Bullets and is... It's really cool, as much as it was amazing to see 100 Bullets wrap up, that, you know, you're jumping back right away with another cool crime story right now, which is great.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't, we didn't plan it that way. It just sort of worked out, you know. I'm really happy to be part of the crime line, though. You know, I want this to succeed. You know, I'll do whatever I can, including talk to you.
Exactly. And that's well appreciated, man. Well, and I remember a long, you know, over 10 years ago now, was it in Paradox Press or was it Piranha that was doing the crime stuff that was in soft cover and kind of digest-sized?
Oh, I don't know. It was Paradox or Piranha or maybe both.
Road to Perdition came from there. History of Crime, History of Violence came from there. Green Candles.
Yeah, wasn't one of them like serialized stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, Joe Staton drew a real mob story. Yeah, it was called Family Man.
Yeah, and that was like three issues or something?
Yep, that's what I mean. It was like there was really cool product, but it just seems maybe the time was wrong for that, and certainly, you know, the comic business in general wasn't helping.
Oh, and right now the comic business is just in such great shape.
No, I wanted to ask you about that.
Nothing to worry about here, kid.
It seems like as a reader that it's certainly better than it was 15 years ago. And no, it's not what it was, you know, 20 years ago. But am I nuts? You tell, you know, you're Mr. Optimistic. Tell me.
Well, look at the numbers. I don't know.
But it seems like they're trying more with different genres as opposed to what I saw back in the 90s. It was hard to find the cool stuff because,
desperate,
I mean,
desperate times come with desperate measures.
Interesting. Okay. Because that's what I was going to say. It seems like they are more open to all these different genres, and I'm glad that they're experimenting.
Well, you know, I think so. I think, you know, despite, you know, what I'm saying about what's going on in the comic market, which is not all that great, but, you know, hey, it is what it is. It's doing a lot better in the bookstores.
Yes.
You know, so that means that the audience, while the number of, maybe the number of the pamphlets is shrinking, the collection number is growing.
And they're taking more notice of that. And obviously now, and certainly with these two books, yours and Ian Rankin's books, you know, marketing to very specifically that bookstore audience. Man, I haven't seen it yet in the Borders and the Barnes and Nobles and places like that. Have you, you know, seen where they're putting them or anything?
No. I haven't seen them in a comic shop. Well, no, that's not true. I saw them last Friday.
That's right.
That's it.
It really is. I mean, you know, again, I'm going to stick to the outside of the book for a second just because they are. They're really well designed. I mean, they look very cool.
Oh, it's a sweet package.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, putting their first foot forward with you and your established reputation with 100 Bullets, and Ian Rankin, a guy that's done you know, I'm a big fan of those Rebus books. Those are very, very cool stories. Tell me about the period that you set it in the early 60s. You know, I'm a sucker for any pulpy stuff from that era, too. Is there something you can articulate in terms of what makes that era in particular fun?
You're in for another dull story here. Boy, when I came up with the idea for Filthy Rich, my, you know, the one-liner was Maurice Clarett becomes Paris Hilton's bodyguard.
Very cool.
But, you know, and then it's like, okay, how do you really play with that a bit? And, you know, the easiest thing was to sort of change the time period that it was happening.
Sure.
Because, you know, I wanted to deal with all the sort of this manufactured celebrity culture that we have. So I kind of, you know, in one regards, I went back to the East Coast well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
New York in those days with all the gossip columns and all that stuff coming out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We've got TMZ today, but that's because this generation doesn't know about Confidential and, you know, Walter Winchell and
right.
Yeah. That whole era as well. No, you're right. And that's why, you know, the wheel really does come around. And I, you know, you say Paris Hilton, I was thinking like Anne Margaret in like Kitten with a Whip and stuff like that.
In Filthy Rich?
Yep.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's not what inspired me. It really was. It was Paris Hilton and Maurice Clarett. It was crazy. And it happened. I mean, I'm over in Spain. You know, I'm checking. I'll get online, whatever,
mm-hmm.
And I'm reading stories about these people. It's like, why the hell are they in my life? You know?
I do know.
Yeah.
You start off on, like, MSN or Google and stuff, and, yeah, they've got it right there for you on the front page,
yeah.
Whether you want it or not.
Just, like, you know, that's... It was being in Spain, in Barcelona, trapped in a hotel room because I was, I was writing the segment of...
Gotham Knight?
Yeah. Yeah, at the same time. So I really, I was not able to really go out and see the city. So I'm already in a bad mood. and you know, I'm looking for news or what's going on over here, and you know, someone's not wearing panties, and other guy's riding around with vodka and an axe in his car. It's like, what the hell is happening?
I guess the good news is when you're in a bad mood, we get good stories, because the Gotham Knights story was a really good story,
too. It worked out, huh?
I think so. So, yeah, I think I know when, if we see you with a scowl on your face, things are going good. We're going to get a story, pretty soon.
Yeah, really.
Are there any current events that are kind of inspiring you? I don't want to, you know, pull any tricks out of the bag too early, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan's house got robbed.
No. Did you read about that? Well, I mean real news. I don't mean the Paris Hilton stuff, but yeah, I mean,
I'm hooked on that crap now. I can't get away from it.
Paris Hilton has you as a friend on Facebook now and everything.
No.
Okay.
Paris isn't one of that's not one of my sites.
Okay.
He's too snarky. I like my gossip delivered rather, you know, straight, just the facts.
TMZ.
And once in a while. TMZ gets a little bit too...
God, you know, at the radio station, that's all the morning shows you're just combing every day.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, well, yeah, exactly. And you're right. I mean, it's John and Kate. Did you ever really want to know that much about John and Kate? Can't you kill them off in a book somewhere?
Oh, God. You know, and I've never seen their show.
Neither have I.
I really don't watch reality television. It's not anything that interests me.
Not even the ones where, like, you know, they're building something or anything like that, or...
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, I like some of the. No, none of these reality show contests or whatever the hell they are things. I don't watch that stuff.
Well, the good news is, as some of these reality shows keep coming up, it's interesting that we're getting more and more Soprano-like, short season television.
Well, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, in some cases, I think they're afraid the idea may not sell. So they certainly on basic cable, it looks like.
What do you mean some? In every case, they're afraid to commit the money for something longer than what you're seeing already.
But on basic, though, as opposed to, you're right, and I mean, certainly on the over-the-air networks, the big five now, I guess, including the CW and Fox, yeah, most shows won't even make it to 13 episodes. But at least on, like, FX and USA and stuff, you know, they're given at least a chance to tell one story before they go.
Yeah, you hope so. I think a lot of that, you know, has to do with also... just sort of the structure, the way things are going right now. Producers are taking a lot less money, and they're gambling on themselves.
Okay.
Like a bigger piece in the rear end. Whoa, hey.
Yeah, I know. Thank you very much. What about 100 Bullets? Is that in development anywhere, or sitting on a shelf waiting for the right suitor?
Of course it is. Don't hold your breath. You know?
That's too bad. It is and it isn't, you know what I mean?
No, it's not too bad. I mean, if you held your breath, you'd be...
dead?
Yeah, you'd be dead rather soon. We're working on it. That's all. You know, you see the trailer, I guess, on television, then you'll know maybe it's going to be on, because it could get pulled.
What about the video game?
Oh, that's dead.
All right, that's fine. Good news, 13 volumes of a great story. And I can't help but wonder if you didn't have to, you know, do it from an art standpoint, do you think you would have written it any faster? You know what I mean? I mean, it had to be a 10-year thing because of it being coming out monthly and everything. But what about from your standpoint writing it?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I never really considered that. You know, it was always meant for Eduardo to be drawing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so would I have written it any quicker if there would have been... more people drawing it? Maybe I would have sort of changed the format a bit too, I guess, but you know, I've never really thought about that or considered it. You know, it came out at the pace that the two of us could get it done.
Was there a point though, ever, you know, six volumes in, four volumes in, where you're like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck did I do? You know?
Never.
That's cool. I mean, honestly, I mean, that's, you know, 10 years, that's tough, man. And forgive me, because yeah, duh, who am I talking to? But,
well, you know, it's not... Look, how tough is it for me?
Yeah.
It's not that tough. You know, it's like we're talking 10 years, yeah, but, you know, just a... I don't know, you know, 7 to 10 days a month for 10 years? You know, it's not like Eduardo. He had to live with that book for, you know, pretty straight. I mean, it's different for an artist. It's much more difficult.
That's true.
You know, I wasn't living with that book the way he was.
Did you ever ask him and, you know, like...
No, he goes, like, we're going 100. That's what we committed to, and that's what we're going to do. and I want to go there. And I thought his last issue, man, he killed.
Well, and as did you. Good ending.
A lot of killing in that book.
No, and that's why, man. It really is. It's incredibly satisfying, and it's you do kind of wonder what's coming next, and that's why Filthy Rich, like I said, was this nice little from the people who brought you Underbus, or at least a couple of the people that brought you.
The Wednesday Comics. That's from the people that brought you, other than Dave.
Hey, well, before we get to Wednesday's Comics, let me ask you about Dave, because I talked to him even in Orlando and asked him how much he was able to get from you guys each month in terms of, like, you know, cover ideas and stuff.
What did he say?
He said it was tough.
Yeah. I learned early in the process that the less he knows, the better the covers were.
Just as great as Eduardo's Interiors, beautiful color covers that told their own story.
Yeah, I definitely did not want illustrative covers. You know, we were going for something else.
I want to go back to Filthy Rich just for a second.
No, we can talk about that all night if you want.
Excellent, man. Cool lead character, Junk, and aptly named. From his knee to his life, and, you know, this is a guy who can't make whatever's in front of him work.
Yeah.
That was my thinking in terms of...
Well, he's his own best friend and his own worst enemy.
Just that whole dark period, too, of the 50s and 60s when it comes to gambling and sports and everything. I always think that's kind of an interesting place to go.
I would love to do something with the point shaving in basketball.
Sure. You know, I found out new stuff about that? Al Lewis, Grandpa Munster.
Yeah, you know, he was like... When the Munsters were through, he was like one of the most respected high school basketball scouts in the country.
Yep. I mean, that's the thing. There's so many classic things in that period, I think, in that late 50s, early 60s. I mean, you know, again, we talked about the publicity end of it. Just that whole Rat Pack era and that post-war kind of, all right, we just went through hell for 5 years. Let's live a little.
Yeah, and let's have, you know, this sort of facade that everything's great, you know, and it was, you know, intensely corrupt.
Well, and you had that, like, half-suburbia thing where they were kind of building their perfect homes and perfect lives, and then, yeah, meanwhile, in the city, you know, business as usual.
Oh, yeah, we won the war, we freed Europe, meanwhile, there's a segment of our population that we are keeping down.
Well, and you kind of delve into that, too, in 100 Bullets. And that was the fun thing about 100 Bullets, the way that...
Yeah, that's always fun.
Well, it, you know, really, just that structure behind the facade.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask about Wednesday's Comics, because you're back to Batman. I always like to point out that one damn issue of Lex Luthor, Man of Steel, when he has lunch with Bruce, and Broken City, and the Gotham Knights short. All these different shades of Batman, man. It seems like you've always got a new Batman story to think about and give us. In very different ways, and it's a very well-rounded portrait of the character when you put them all together.
Is it really? Or is it a well-rounded portrait of Bruce Wayne?
Do you ever think about that, or do you ever, you know, that discussion, who is the, you know, who's the disguise and who's the real guy?
They're, you know, they're both parts of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
And you're going to see another completely different one in Batman Doc Savage.
We're going to get to that because I want to talk about all the pulp stuff.
You gave me, like, what a segue there.
Yeah, I know. Well, I want to talk about this Batman story first. These broadsheets, I guess they're like the equivalent of maybe 2 pages of story, you tell me.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way I approached them.
So like a 24-page equivalent comic script, basically?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're going to get, like, one story. What it comes down to, really, you're getting... 12 one-page vignettes that will make up a story.
How is it adapting to the newspaper style as opposed to the comic book style?
Well, you know, you have to have, at least I thought, you know, every page has to, like I said, it's a vignette. There is some information that's delivered, and, you know, you get a little insight into something, and, you know, every page has a point.
Well, they feel like full scenes, definitely. Were there any models of past comic strips that you used as an example? I mean, it's...
Tracy.
Okay. Boy, it's been a long time since the good days of Tracy. I hate to shit on a Chicago product, but I got to be honest. I don't know. Are you reading the current Tracy?
No.
You know, Max Collins did a great job on the series when he was on it.
That was a while ago, though.
That was... You're damn right. That was like 25 years ago, literally. So, and actually maybe even longer, because I think that was before Ms. Tree and all that stuff.
Was it?
It was either at the same time or maybe he lost the gig because of Ms. Tree. I can't remember.
I thought Ms. Tree kind of led into him getting that gig, but I could be wrong.
No, he started in the late 70s, but I know it was before Ms. Tree. And I think it was more from his novel work, because he had a mystery novel that he did that had a comic book component to it. Has it been fun? Was it a kind of fun writing challenge?
I am so happy and proud to be part of that. You know,
absolutely.
I think it's just a great package, and you know, everybody involved has really brought their A game.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to read every week. It really is, and I hope they keep it event style. And I would imagine from a scheduling standpoint they'd have no choice, but, you know, should they do it again, and I have a feeling they likely will given the success of this so far.
Well, I was in New York last week. I was talking to Chi about that, Mark Chiarella, the editor. Like, no way, no.
Really?
Like, this killed me. I'm like, you know, you're saying that now. It's like, when it's done, you're going to miss it.
Ah.
And if you're starting now, you know, look at that lead time to next summer. It's like, I don't believe you.
Well, that's why it was so disappointing to see Solo go down. Because I know even Jill was, like, being talked to about possibly doing an issue. And I thought that was a really neat book. And it seems like the spirit of Solo is there in terms of it being an anthology and a showcase for different, just different stories. In that case, it was each month, and it was, I know, only one artist. But I think from an artistic standpoint, would you agree
that
Solo and Wednesday's Comics kind of have a kinship to them?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, and I just think Mark is an interesting...
Well, you know what the kinship is? Mark works with who he wants to.
But I'm hoping that if it does continue, we get some of these same artists that did some of the Solo books. Like, I would love to see a strip from Jordi Bernet. I don't know if he'd be interested in doing it. And by the way, I'd love to see you work with Jordi Bernet sometime.
Well, I did it Solo.
I forgot. There you go. I like what you do with Batman. I think it's, like I said, I mean, and I think when people were ready to peg you as just the street-level Batman, that's what I thought made the Gotham Knights short really interesting, too. Because while it did have a street component to it, obviously...
Much of the street component.
Yes, indeed. Best last line. Lines, I should say, because of the exchange from him and Alfred. I love that.
Oh. Well, yeah, that was really trying to get into his head.
Well, literally, in that whole story. And that's why that Indian kind of parable. And an interesting locale that outside of Ra's al Ghul kind of stories and stuff, I don't think we've seen, you know, I tons of Batman in the Orient, tons of Batman in London, here's criminology or whatever, here's how you move like a ninja. But I don't remember many Indian stories beyond Ra's stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that all came about. It's like I wanted to tell a story. Literally, I was given one line to work off of, which was, Batman's in he's down in the sewers and he's been shot. He's got to get out. He's looking for a gun. Yeah, okay, he's been shot. We've never really explored the way he deals with pain, you know, physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to do.
Very cool. Now, let's talk for a second about this pulp stuff coming up. Let me ask you first, from a superhero standpoint, because, yeah, I know Batman's a detective with a cape and stuff, but, you know, superheroes versus these pulp heroes. Is powers the only difference, and like the magic or whatever explains their powers, is that the only divide that you see in pulp heroes versus superheroes, or is there more to it?
I think there's more to it, sure. You know, I think motivationally, the characters are motivated differently. You know,
the pulp heroes?
Yeah, why they do things. What gets them involved? Usually... you know, Doc being the exception, but a lot of the other ones, you know, their motivations are real dark.
I know that the initial story is the one shot with Doc and Batman, But I know also the upcoming miniseries has a ton of characters. I'm going to start. It's the Spirit, the Shadow. Is the Avenger in there?
The Shadow's not in there.
Oh, the Shadow's not in there.
No.
Bummer. How many, beyond Doc, how many of the other Street and Smith heroes are you able to get a hold of?
The Avenger.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, and then, okay, so just Doc and the Avenger.
From Condé Nast, yeah.
Okay, so the Spirit is in there.
Yeah.
The Blackhawks?
Yes.
Black Canary?
Yes.
Who else from, whom I miss, unless there are surprises that you don't want to...
Well, there's a few that you're going to see, yeah.
Okay.
Rima the Jungle Girl.
Is that a DC character, or is that somebody that
no,
they had a license?
She sprang out of a Victorian novel, actually.
Interesting. Okay. But, you know, yeah, it'd be in that, you know, Sheena, Jan of the Jungle, whoever, mold, or no? Different character?
Well, South America.
Okay. Interesting. Oh, very interesting. Well, that's cool. And I can see some lines there from other pulp characters in that roster, and I'll keep it general for people who aren't as hip to pulp heroes, and they can get surprised for themselves.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, you're right, and I would agree about some of the dark motivations of some of these characters, because, like, the Avenger, damn, you know, DC back in the 70s, they only had, like, you know, three issues that were only made interesting because of Jack Kirby's art. I don't know. Did you take a look at any of that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it all.
Any thoughts on the Avenger take?
He's a really dark character. And we're actually making him even darker.
Very cool. Do they, I know Kyle Baker and, was it Andy Heffler that did it too?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the Shadow team that did that both in the Shadow series and then the graphic novel too. That's cool. Now, he kind of had powers to a degree.
His power is disguise.
Okay. Are you grounding it more to just that he's a master of disguise? Because wasn't his face kind of like clay or malleable that he could...
Well, that's why he was able to... Yeah, his face was like... he has no muscle control of his face. Well, he has a lot of muscle control, but so he can mold his face to... look like someone else.
Okay. And really born from tragedy. Are we going to see, like, little origins for these guys, too?
Yeah, of course.
Very cool. Excellent. Now, the Spirit, I've really enjoyed the new series, and I thought Darwin's one was great, and I thought, man, Sergio and Mark Evanier wrote a really interesting Spirit. What shade of difference are you going to bring to the Spirit?
Well, we've got to make him fit within this world, so we're going to be probably some of the more overt comic elements are going to be gone.
Okay.
I also like the idea of the Spirit as a guy who is kind of he's fearless. He lives on the edge. He takes a lot of risks because he believes he died once.
So he's got, like, a free pass?
He's living on borrowed time.
Okay. Is he... Now, and I remember I was talking about this at the Chicago Comic Con. You were saying that Gotham City, which has always traditionally either been New York or Chicago, is going
we're
to be...
moving it to the West Coast.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's just trying to open up this whole sort of world for these characters to run around in. If you've got, you know... Doc Space is Manhattan.
Yep.
He lives in the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm. yes, he does.
Central City, Chicago.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's called Central City.
Well, I never heard, you know, I mean, you just always assumed, especially Eisner coming from New York and his love affair with New York, it seems in so many stories, that even though it was called Central City, that it really was more New York, but...
You know, when I was reading those old Warren...
Love those. Yes, absolutely.
I always thought it was Chicago.
Interesting. And this is you growing up in Cleveland, right?
Yeah, but because those books had the kind of, it had the Untouchables vibe.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Wild gangsters running amok. And
how many of the supporting characters are all going to be, like, you know, will Dolan and Gordon be there?
Yes, both.
Cool. Very interesting.
We'll take some very different takes on them as well.
Is Gordon, you know... And again, this is kind of your own world, and I've heard you describe this as well. Why don't you tell everyone, like, as far as a time period? We've talked about the cities, but what about the time period you're setting this?
Timeless. No. It's I don't want to peg it down. There's going to be a lot of references to things that we, you know, take for granted right now and have. You know, like there will be computers, but you know, there's also going to be Tommy guns. You know.
Cool.
The cars are going to have running boards.
That's it. So will they look like 30s cars, or will they look like futuristic cars with running boards?
30s cars, man.
Okay. That's
what
cool.
What I want to do for these the artists that are working on it, it's like, you know, let's take the greatest design elements of the 20th century, just throw them all together.
And you've got, for the one shot, is it Rags?
Phil Noto,
thank you. Yeah. Wow. Well, Phil's going to be great, because, man, I got to tell you, every time that guy draws a book, it's, you know... Much like Dan Brereton on Thrill Kill with Shaken. You know, it's like paperback covers come to life.
And that's exactly what you're going to get, yeah.
Excellent. That's great, man. Very, very cool. Well, good for Phil. That's really cool. Man, I honestly, all of his, all those Batman and Birds of Prey covers that he did, you know, in the early 2000s, and the stuff he did with Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, and yeah, I'm a big Phil fan. That's very, very neat. Were you a Doc reader?
Yeah.
Because I always wonder how many... people younger than us really, you know, got into the pulps, because it's you know, especially now, and it's...
Well, I think I can tell you how many.
None?
Zero.
But it seems like, you know, at these cons...
The words of Dean Wormer, 0.0.
All right. But at the cons, it seems like people are very excited about this concept, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they know of the character, but they don't know him, you know?
Okay.
A lot of those, I mean, those paperbacks have been out of print for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I know that they're all being reissued. But, I don't know. It's funny, all the characters that Doc Savage spawned and elements of characters that everybody loves, and he, you know, this guy himself, he gets no love.
Yeah, you know, Fortress of Solitude, mm-hmm. Man of Bronze, as opposed to Man of Steel. And yeah, I mean, this is really, you know, as close to Superman as you're going to get it from a human being standpoint, obviously.
Exactly, yeah.
Man, that Ron Eli movie should have been a hell of a lot better, though.
Yes, like all the other Ron Eli movies.
And Tarzan. But he really did. Was there anyone else that could play him in 1975? Other than Bo Svenson, maybe?
Oh, God. 1975? No.
Did you read the Marvel stuff when it was coming out back then?
Yeah, I don't remember any of it, though.
Recently, I bought some of the black and white magazines. Because, for whatever reasons, when he was in the color comics and they literally made him a Man of Bronze, it just looked wrong to me. I thought Doug Munch did a pretty neat job of, you know, maintaining not only the character, but, you know, his gang as well.
Right.
They're all there. Very cool. Hammond Monk at each other's throats. Doc, Remy, Long John, Long Tom.
Long Tom, yeah.
And Johnny.
Johnny, yeah, they're all there.
Very cool. That's excellent, man. And I even liked DC's, 80, I liked the miniseries that the Kuberts all did with Danny O'Neill. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's all been fun. hopefully we're going to last a little longer.
Is it an ongoing or is it a miniseries? What's the deal?
It's a miniseries.
Okay, it starts with the Phil issue.
Right.
And then Rex takes over, and it's 8 issues or 12 issues?
6 issues.
Oh, 6 issues, all right.
Big issues.
6 big issues, okay. Are they going to be like 48-page, 64-page?
Not that big.
32-page?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Big-ish, I guess.
All right, no, that's cool. Like I said, I love all these characters, and I look forward to what you're going to do with Black Canary. Is Green Arrow going to be there?
That just sort of muddies the waters.
Are she and the Jungle Girl, then, the only female heroes?
Women and Blackhawk.
I forgot, of course, Lady Blackhawk.
No, she's not going to be one of them.
Oh, there are women in Blackhawk, plural.
The new Blackhawk.
Interesting. Are they new? Are they new Blackhawks? All of them?
No, I'd say no. They're not all new.
Just a few are.
The majority.
Okay. Were there Blackhawk writers or artists that you in particular enjoyed?
I loved what Chaykin did.
Absolutely. You know, I thought Marty Pascal's running right after Chaykin's was really cool too.
Yeah. I love anything Howard touches, man. I love.
Oh yeah.
But you know, right? Our Blackhawks. Most of the guys that you know are dead. There are a few that are still around.
In this world, is like so. This is post whatever war. You know.
Yeah.
Again, timeless world, but yeah. So this is after whatever war they were in.
There was a war that will be referred to.
Okay.
Over and over again as the war.
And Batman is, like you said, this is like month one. Not only year one, but month one.
Yeah.
Newly minted. And yeah. Doc finds out about him and isn't crazy about him because he doesn't know what the hell this guy represents.
Right. Well, look at him. What does he represent?
Guy in a bat suit beating people up.
Right. What is, you know.
Is there room for the kinds of villains that were in the pulp books back then in this story?
Yes.
Very interesting, man.
Yeah.
Because I think there's just a very fine line between a superhero world, at least based on you in panels and stuff, you kind of seemed like you were done with. But again, in this pulp world, a lot of the same tropes, for whatever reasons, maybe they go down better in this world rather than in the superhero world for
you. For example, I'm closing off China. You know, the biggest power in Asia is lack of a better word, world, intense, there's two words, intensely private. So the rest of the world doesn't know what's going on there.
Interesting.
Or what they're up to. I'm trying to... we're creating a world where there's still a lot of mystery going on and a lot of uncharted territory and continents and you know that kind of stuff.
Sure. So yeah, the world isn't as known as it is today.
Right. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah, no kidding. And it you're right. Isn't that, man? I am such a sucker for not only noir but like foreign intrigue. If you take it back in that pre-current World War II and post-world periods. And yeah, I always just, any stories like that always fascinated the hell out of me. And that's why the Bond, you know, stories were always so cool. They were these exotic locations that we had never been to.
They were these exotic, mysterious locations.
Yes.
Where, you know, some asshole with a cannon, he wants to blow up the moon. Oh, that makes sense.
Yep. There's, well, it's interesting because, you know, yeah, now Doc has his, you know, rogues, and I'm not going to ask you to name any because obviously I'm happy to read the story itself. But even the Avenger, I don't even know if he had a regular bad guy. The Spider is not part of this, by the way, at all?
No.
Yeah, you would have named him, obviously, by now.
Yeah.
If he was. You know, are Batman's villains going to be part of this?
Not the way you might recognize them.
Gotcha.
The white hats and the black hats will not be obvious.
Okay. Is Commissioner Gordon regular Commissioner Gordon, or is he Lieutenant Gordon at this point?
He's Lieutenant Gordon.
Okay. All right, I don't want to ask any weird particulars like that. No Dick Grayson?
No. Having somebody run around with him and he has to be responsible for it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
For him.
What about Pat Savage?
Yeah, she's got to be in it.
Cool. Well, you
kidding?
Know.
Otherwise, Doc Savage is the biggest sausage fest book in the world.
Yeah. Well, Pat in the right hands, man, is for artists and stuff. That's going to be fun to see. Man, Phil, and certainly Phil's a good guy to put her in hands with, and so's Rags for that matter.
Yeah, Phil won't. You won't see her then.
Oh, she's not in the one shot.
No.
Okay. Are the five in the one shot?
One of the five. just Rennie. Rennie I've kind of crafted, you know, they've given me some leeway with these characters. So Rennie's kind of, he's with Doc pretty much all the time. Kind of acts as a, he's got Doc's back. You know, I don't want to call him a bodyguard, but he's, you know.
Okay, he is the big one. Because honestly, I sometimes forget beyond Ham and Monk. I remember Ham is the, you know, lawyer that had the sword cane and was kind of the, you know, that kind of guy. Monk obviously was, you know, he was really kind of the muscle. Although, or, you know, just whatever, just the bulldog, I guess.
Monk was the original Wolverine.
You're right.
I know I am.
That's cool. And I never thought of it that way. You are 100% right. I never thought of it that way. That's very interesting. And yeah, so Remy's his Man Friday that is kind of, you know, a giant that can handle himself in a fight and everything.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, you know, I don't want to say he's not his butler, but he's, you know, he does a lot of, you know, he's going to be doing a lot of scheduling for Doc and just, like, taking care of business. And...
Cool. For the Hidalgo Trading Company?
Yes, that will be part of it.
Man, you know, really, you're going to be a good substitute for Viagra for a lot of readers that are our age and older. All the Pulp fans, I think, are now, are they giving you shit, or are you like, is everyone excited as far as the older fans like that?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you haven't, you know, no one's come up to you con-wise yet and said, hey, man, this is cool, or how dare you?
No, not yet. People don't come up to me at cons and say, how dare you?
They're afraid of you.
I don't know about that, but I don't think people come up to anybody at cons and say, how dare you? You know, when they're sitting in front of their computer screen.
Ah, yeah, that's true. I had to ask because I didn't know this before. Jason Aaron and a bunch of the current wave of the Vertigo guys have a message board. Is that you really answering those questions?
I haven't answered one of those questions in a long time.
Okay, I didn't know how old they were and everything, but that's
interesting.
Terrible
at that stuff, man. And
well,
Jason rides me about it now. I'm just, I don't know. I don't spend a lot of my time on comic board.
I understand.
I'm too busy on all the sports boards.
Now, I got to tell you, we were talking about this the other day, because honestly, after 15 years of being in sports, I've unplugged. I had to stop. It was too much making the donuts every day. Yeah. And it wasn't fun anymore. So, but one area that I stayed in was boxing. And I got to tell you, man, I disagree with you and Dan Salazar. You guys think Tyson, like, where do you put Mike Tyson all time?
Me?
Yeah.
It is heyday?
Yeah.
Top three.
Okay. Who else are in the top three?
Oh, Ali has to be.
Okay. Lewis, Marciano? No?
Lennox Lewis?
No, Joe. I would put Lennox Lewis in the top 10.
So would I. Or would he be, you know? I mean, he had a great career, but, you know, who'd he fight?
Yeah, but, you know, honestly, you look at Marciano, it was kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's too bad that boxing isn't what it used to be. I want to see you do a crime boxing story. You should do, like, a kind of, I mean, that's always rife for pulpy stories.
That's funny. Scott Morris and I have talked about doing something like that.
Magic Pickle Scott Morris?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, that'd be great. He has a wonderful style like that, too.
Yeah.
Tell me about this generation of the new Vertigo guys. Like, we mentioned Jason Aaron. There's Josh Dysart. There's Brian Wood. This is, it's interesting, because you were kind of part of the Vertigo 2.0 class, and now we got 3.0 kind of going on right now.
Yeah, well, I think 3.0 is doing a great job. Scalped is a great book.
Yep.
DMZ is great. I love Northlanders.
Love them both. Absolutely. All three of them. Yeah.
The Unknown Soldier is fantastic. Much to Josh's credit.
I would agree.
I thought he was going to wreck that character. I did. I told him. And he proved me wrong.
That's cool. Are there more war stories in you?
What's that?
Are there more war stories in you?
Who knows? I don't know. Who knows? I don't know.
Okay.
It's going to be, you know, this Doc Savage thing is going to be a big war.
Okay.
You know, like historical war? No.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Not in the foreseeable future.
No? Okay.
No.
Are there any other, again, you're kind of scratching that itch with this story with the Pulp Heroes as far as being able to kind of choose your favorite bits from any era. This is cool. This kind of reminds me of when Chaykin was doing, like, Times Squared and all that stuff. Actually, I'd say 90% of Chaykin's stuff has that kind of all the great eras in one kind of feel to him in a good way.
Yeah.
That's cool. Did you have a chance to talk to him when he was here in Chicago?
I didn't even know he was here.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, he was cracking me up. He was half the entertainment, just even waiting in line for a sketch from him and everything. He was very funny.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great guy, man.
That's cool.
I talked to him in San Francisco when I was there.
Oh, that's cool. So did I. Yeah, I remember that. That was very cool. Excellent. What other cons have you got coming up before the end of the year?
Nothing.
Okay. You're gonna be here for C2E2, the big Chicago show, the new one?
Yeah.
Cool. The Around Comics podcast is a friend of Word Balloon, and I know they are doing 100 Bullets in 100 Days.
Right.
And I understand you will be joining them for a full review of the story.
Yeah, I'm going to be the 101 bullet.
That's very cool. That's great, man. Well, and that's, you know, have you gotten anyone who's talked to you now that the series is wrapped up in terms of, like, you know, new readers that are picking it up or have just started? I mean, are you coming across those fans as well when you go to cons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's fantastic, too, you know. You know, going to these shows, it's like, hey, I just started reading this. Like, oh, my God.
That's great.
You're in for a ride.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. Well, and also, I don't even know if you know or have ever held the interest, but how about libraries?
What about them?
Like, do they...
I've been to libraries before.
What's that? What'd you say?
I've been to libraries.
Excellent. Have you seen 100 Bullets carried in the libraries?
I've actually... some kid brought me a copy of 100 Bullets to sign that was from a library that he stole.
Don't do that anymore.
That's what I said, and I didn't sign it.
Okay, that's good.
You're killing me.
Yeah, man. No, it's... Well, and because I'm interested, because obviously this isn't, you know, an all-ages book. And I wonder, you know, there are cool libraries that get it and certainly are carrying any type of graphic novel, and I think that's good. But I just wonder how many and, you know.
No, I think we do fairly well in libraries.
That's cool. Yeah. And the foreign market's still a good place for 100 Bullets, I would imagine?
Wonderful place. Yeah.
Very cool.
Very good. Very, very good.
Now, I'm sure you guys are done from a creative standpoint with the Wednesday Comics story, but, like, do you see a time where you'll get back with Eduardo beyond...
Do I see a time?
Or are you guys already planning something new?
Next week, we begin.
All right, now, I did hear about this, so tell me, can you tell us anything about the series?
It's going to be from Vertigo.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I remember when you teased Loveless like this, so that's fine.
It won't be 100 issues.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah, really. I'm sure. Is he? I mean, obviously you guys have a wonderful working relationship and stuff, but, you know, I'm sure there's a long line of writers that are like, hey, man, can we play with him now?
Oh, well, that's up to him.
I hear you.
We have four different projects in the pipeline.
That's great. Outstanding, man. That's fantastic.
We are going to continue to work together.
Very cool. Well, Vertigo is very lucky to have you, man. I mean, you've...
Yeah, I sent him...
Huh?
I sent him four, you know, there were four ideas I was working on. It's like, okay, here are four ideas. Which one do you want to do? And he said, why don't we just do them all? Okay.
Outstanding. Very cool. Now, that's going to, from a scheduling standpoint, well, it's a different artist, so... I mean, like you said, you're gonna start talking about it next week?
No.
Or you're sending in a script already next week?
I'm starting the script. He's starting to do character design.
Wow. So 2010, we'll see some of this stuff?
I would imagine, you know, unless they want to hold it back.
Very cool.
I would hope it would be 2010, you know?
That's cool. Beyond the pulp stuff that you're doing for the DC Universe arm, is there any other DC stuff in the works for you?
Well, that pulp universe thing, I'm going to be involved in for a while. So that's going to be pretty much taking up all my DCU time.
Okay. Is it just you as writer, or are you even, you know?
No. There's going to be many other writers.
That's what I was wondering. So it is a... Are you like editorially kind of guiding this as well?
Yeah, I guess I am. I have input, so.
The miniseries is kind of serving as like a Bible for the world?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Excellent. Have you started talking to the other writers?
Yes.
Cool. We'll all be pleased when we start hearing these names as they start popping up.
I hope so.
Is it, are their projects going to come out after the series or during the series?
Probably after, I would think.
Okay. So, well, that's interesting.
There'll be some overlap, I'm sure.
Okay. So, well, that's, you know, that's interesting because, you know, the question always is with when you obtain a license from, you know, a different owner, it's always, well, how long are they going to have this? You know, and or at least that was the old way of thinking, I mean, or the old concern. And also it seems like, you know, the Burroughs family would always, you know, keep Tarzan for a few years. And don't get me wrong, everyone was happy when it was just, you know, a few years. But all of a sudden you might get used to, you know, Joe Kubert doing Tarzan. And the next thing you know, John Buscema is doing it over at Marvel.
Well, I don't think Joe Kubert or John Buscema is going to be involved in anything.
But the licenses are, you know, DC's to play with for whatever, the foreseeable future, or certainly as long as any of these existing projects last.
You know what? If they sell, DC will have the license. If they don't sell, the license will revert.
Is this the first time that you've worked with licensors other than, you know, DC and Vertigo and Marvel and, you know, the traditional publishers as a writer?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And it's, so then you're, you know, you're dealing with the Eisner Estate.
Wonderful, like, people, by the way.
Very cool. And Dennis Kitchen's still involved with kind of shepherding the estate, correct?
Yeah.
That's really neat. Well, you know, hey, man.
That means, you know, it's in good hands.
Yes. Because, yeah, was he with him during the Warren years? I know he was with them, obviously, when they moved to Kitchen Sink, but.
I don't know.
Okay. Because, yeah, I mean, that's, I'm like, was the Warren spirit, was that the first place that you saw the stuff?
Yeah.
That great, like, peach-colored paper?
Yeah, you know, I bought that stuff. You know, I didn't even know who Will Eisner was at the time.
It just looked cool.
Well, it was, you know, from the same publishers that are giving me Creepy and Eerie, which I loved.
Yep. Would you ever, speaking of Creepy and Eerie, I know Dark Horse just, you know, brought back the anthology. Did you have a chance to see that?
I haven't seen the new stuff, no. I've got the, you know, they put out those hardcovers.
Oh, yeah.
Grab those things.
Oh, they're fantastic, absolutely. I got to say, the new first issue was pretty cool. And plus, Hillary Barda had a great two-pager in there that was very, you know, it honored what, you know, came before in the old issues, but it, you know, had his own spin on it, too. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Hillary's great, man.
Oh, yeah. So, you guys could do something together. You could draw a pretty cool crime thing for you.
Probably. We've always, you know, Hillary and I have talked about doing something, you know. It never goes beyond just, like, talking.
Yeah. Are there any other Chicago guys that, you know, you've known that you haven't had a chance to work with yet?
I really haven't worked with anybody in Chicago, have I?
Well, you and Tony Akins, right?
Tony, right.
Way back.
Yeah. And who's to say Tony won't be part of this new pulp thing?
Fantastic. You're not saying, you're just saying.
I said, who's to say?
Yes, I understand. I understand.
That he won't be.
I hope that happens.
That would be me, wouldn't it?
What's that?
I guess that would be me.
Well, are you, that's interesting. Okay, so really, are you able to kind of say, hey, it'd be great if we can get so-and-so to draw this or write this?
I have input into everybody.
Interesting. Who else is editing this stuff for you?
Joey Cavalieri is the editor.
Okay.
I'm not editing it. Joey's doing the editing.
I understand.
I mean, look, I said this somewhere before. It's like it's a world without superpowers or magic, and I'm God in it. So.
Okay, that's cool. And did they have this plan and came to you with it, or like how did you get involved with this pulp thing?
I've been involved with this pulp thing for probably, I think, 4 years, close to maybe 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did it take that long to get the rights and everything?
Yeah, it did.
Interesting. It's, you know, I don't, and again, I don't mean it in any judgmental way, but maybe you can tell me from an informative standpoint why, you know, King Features would sit on, like, Flash Gordon for decades, it seems, before, like, giving it up again. Or, you know, just, I don't know, I even would see some of the struggles that, like, the Moonstone guys would have with the Phantom, for example. And,
I have no
and,
idea why. Probably because most of these companies are, you know, and I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Or theorizing. They're not really looking to do comic books. They're looking to do film.
Okay, so yeah, this is too small of a game to...
Or if, you know, if a studio says we're interested in doing a film, they'll sit on the damn thing and, you know, cross their fingers rather than, you know, put the property out there.
I understand. Okay. But yeah, and I guess...
You know, and perhaps, maybe now, because, you know, the acceptance, the wide acceptance that graphic novels are getting, the owners of some of these properties, like, you know, hey, we should just do this, and this creates interest and makes it easier for a studio to license it or option it, you know what I mean?
Sure. Did you see Miller's Spirit?
I don't see comic book movies.
None?
Not really.
Interesting. You didn't see The Dark Knight?
I did see that. I had to.
But Watchmen?
I saw that one.
Okay. I don't know.
Name another one.
Wolverine?
No.
Okay. The X-Men movies?
No.
Spider-Man movies?
No.
Oh, you know, and especially, as I always like to point out, that tangled web that you did with Crusher Hogan. Still one of my favorite stories you ever wrote.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely. Well, and that's why I thought their spin on the wrestling was really funny and very modern. So, and it, you know, God, what's his fit? Macho Man was basically the Crusher Hogan character.
Well.
So, I'm surprised you didn't know. Now, do you share Jill's interest in wrestling?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did you enjoy at the Comic-Con all the different wrestling people that were there?
No.
I understand. You don't go to your favorite Italian restaurant to have Chinese food.
Exactly.
I'm him. Get your wrestlers out of my comic show, man. Mm. Well, and the one other question I wanted to ask, and I'm totally jumping around, but it's going to be all assembled and make sense when I put it together. But back to 100 Bullets. Switching from Axel to Will as an editor. Was Will working with Axel before that transition or anything?
No.
So how was that like, switching editors like that? Did it matter? I mean, what is an editor's role in the way, beyond scheduling, in the way that you write?
Well, you know, with 100 Bullets, we were up, you know, that it was a fine-tuned machine by the time, you know, the 20th issue when Will took over.
Okay.
But he was invaluable to it. I mean, look, 80 issues were his.
Who's your editor on The Filthy Rich?
Will. Will's been my editor for pretty much everything I've done, even the DC stuff.
Interesting.
I took him along with Batman and with Superman. Yeah. I'm really comfortable working with him, so. The way the editorial administration is set up in comics, it's really different from, like, book publishing. You know, if I had an editor at HarperCollins that I was comfortable with and I wanted to write a children's book, there would be no question. You know, that's my editor.
Okay.
It's always my editor. And so that's, you know, kind of the way it, you know, that was the relationship Will and I had, you know. But with the you know, this crime line, there was no way he was going to be able to do the Pulp stuff. And Joey is such a fan of the Pulp stuff. It's like, okay, let's go with Joey, man.
How long have you known Joey?
I've known Joey for a few years. This is the first time we've worked together.
Like you said, you had these four ideas with Eduardo for Vertigo and stuff, four new ideas. Do you pitch those to Will? Do you pitch them to Karen? Who do you pitch to?
I pitch to Will.
Okay. Where's Karen in the equation? Other than, you know, obviously being the publisher. I mean, does she...
Ivory Tower.
But does she hear your ideas through Will then and decides yes, let's, or no?
Yeah. To some extent. Originally, yeah, that's the way it would go. Now it's like, you know, Karen, you know, will call me. It's like,
what do you got for us next?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Okay. Sure. Dude, that's the cool thing, honestly, and congratulations, because, yeah, I mean, it's been a nice 10 years, and now, you know, as opposed to the oddity book that it was when it first started and stuff, Paul Levitz always said really nice stuff about 100 Boats, it seems, whenever I've heard him on record, and I think that's really cool, given his, you know, the from where he came from to appreciate what 100 Bullets is and everything.
Well, you know, it was a groundbreaking book for them. There was no sort of magic, no fantasy elements, you know, which was a lot of what Vertigo was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this book came out of kind of nowhere. I'm not going to say it paved the way, but I'm glad it inspired a lot of people that are working there now. You know?
Absolutely.
Tell stories that are based firmly in a reality as real as comics can get.
Well, and it's neat, like you say, that they have kind of opened, the area more for people like Jason to come in and Brian to come in and
yeah.
David Laffin and, and then also to take this new step, not only with the crime books, but, the stuff that Wagner's doing now with Madame Xanadu, which is more magic, but, G. Willow Wilson, I mean, it seems like Vertigo continues to reinvent itself and also,
remain... That's what makes it vital.
Yeah, well, and yes, vital and keeping the other boys guessing across the street because... this Vertigo still is the model of how to do, interesting books.
Oh, the boys across the street would argue that.
I have to say, I've heard the boys across the street admit that, and I think that they're getting closer with Max series and the ideas that they're doing, and they've got a lot of really good writers over there, and some you guys share with Marvel. But
are they doing that? I mean, what they're doing is maybe they're filtering their characters through different lenses, but they're still... Max Punisher with swearing.
Yeah, but now wait a minute. I think Garth told some good Punisher stories. But also they're experimenting.
No, I'm not. Listen, I worked for Max. And it was
Banner, right?
I don't think Banner was Max. Maybe it was.
Well, of course, you're Cage. Yeah, exactly, Cage.
But that's one of their characters.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm trying to... they did try...
Vertigo's much more interested in doing creator-owned properties. Or, brand-new stuff. Rather than reinvention. I think that, that's just a philosophical difference,
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep things fresh? We continually throw brand new series against the wall rather than have the Punisher say fuck.
I suppose.
Not that there's anything wrong with it, because I think they've got some of the best writers working in comics today doing the Punisher.
I agree. So, are you a Dwayne Swierczynski fan?
Yes, I am.
As well you should be. I kind of figured you were. I figured that was a safe question.
No, I like him. I like Victor Gishler.
Yeah.
I think Greg Hurwitz wrote one of the best crime novels I've read in the past 5 years. The Crime Writer. Fantastic.
I haven't read it. All right, I'll check it out.
It's great. Jason Starr is going to be working on Punisher now, and that guy's, his books are fantastic. Just out of this world, man.
They did try with Book of Souls, And that was kind of a Vertigo fantasy sort of book with Colleen and J. Michael Straczynski, but the Marvel boys didn't buy it at the end of the day.
Wow, and that's, you know, that's the bottom line for everybody.
Oh, yeah. It seems like, though, Vertigo really was the first to say or realize, you know, we'll do the best we can with the monthlies. Obviously, the way to go, though, is the trades, and fine,
yeah,
so
I
be it.
I think DC has a much more robust trade program going, you know?
What does that mean? That they just have, like, the business structure that's kind of pushing the product in that direction? Okay.
You know, and I, you know, I said DC, maybe I should probably amend that and say Vertigo. I don't know how well those, you know, the superhero stuff selling. Maybe I consider myself an average comic reader. I have a hard time picking up a superhero trade because it's part of this immense continuity that, you know, I'm not familiar with. Jesus, why did the Joker do so well? Number one, because it was the Joker. Number two, because you didn't need to know anything.
Definitely. Well, no, that story stood on its own, but it also stood on, well, it's that difference between consistency and continuity.
Yeah, I mean, Joker does not belong in continuity.
Interesting.
It could be a continuity story if you want to put it in there, but that's, you know, you did it in your own head. I certainly didn't do it in mine.
It was good seeing you and Lee Bermejo back together. I mean, that was a great story. And, yeah, one of the best, certainly one of the best of last year. Did you guys win any hardware for that?
What did we win? We won,
Did you win an Eisner?
No, we weren't even nominated.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy. What did you? But you guys did win a couple of awards for it. That's great.
A couple different places, but no, we weren't even nominated for an Eisner.
Interesting. How about 100 Bullets? Was it nominated at all?
I guess it was nominated for Best Colorist.
Well, and you know, and again, I made the mistake earlier and stuff. Tell me about her because I've
Trish.
Yes, thank you.
She's fantastic, man. She's been with the book slightly longer than Will.
Okay.
She wasn't the original colorist, but we were very, very lucky to get her. And she was picked by Eduardo.
Interesting. Is she from, where is she from?
New York.
New York, okay. Very cool. That's great, man. Is she going to be with you guys on these four projects, potentially?
I imagine.
Cool.
There's potential for her to be there. Yeah.
That's cool. Do you ever have color notes for your stories?
Oh, I leave that up to the artist.
Okay.
So I'll describe whether it's during the night or the day, but not really.
I know you were a painter. How much does your art background figure into notes to Eduardo, or whatever artist you're working with?
I think my background completely informs what I tell, you know, what my art direction is, which is completely sparse and hands-off.
Okay.
I would hate to have somebody telling me what to do.
Okay.
So I really leave it up, you know, to the people that are actually doing the work. I think that's how you get your you know, you get the best out of somebody. You know, they're just as invested in the story as you are.
Sure. So then from a script standpoint, is your stuff, how would you describe, like, are you describing panels at, like, what are you describing? Just, did really, I mean, is it like a regular, you know, screenplay, or?
I'd say it's closer to a screenplay than it is to a comic script. You know, I do break it down into panels.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'll set the scene. I'll say, like, what the room that I'm envisioning looks like. That'll be, like, the establishing shot.
Right.
And then it's just, like, two-shot, wide shot, close-up on, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Really sparse.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Very cool. Well, there you go. Eduardo is definitely carrying his share of the load, man.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
great.
But I think, you know, my job is to convey the story through the dialogue. And if I'm doing a good job, the artist gets the way these characters are behaving. by what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know something? I've kept you long enough. I kept you an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I know. I appreciate it. But, yeah, I mean, it's... No, you're a good man. Filthy Rich is great. It's always a pleasure to get a new crime story from Brian Azzarello. So keep it up. And this Pulp project really sounds cool. And glad to hear there's new stuff coming up in Vertigo and The Hopper. And enjoying what I'm reading and looking forward to more.
Thanks, John.
Well, thanks for taking the time tonight.
Sure. You know, I always like talking to you, John.
You're a good man.
Am I a masochist?
Check out the work of Brian Azzarello. One book we didn't mention, the Noir Collection, that is from Dark Horse. There's a Brian Azzarello story in there. But also pick up Filthy Rich from the Vertigo Crime Line. And coming soon, DC's first wave, starting with the Doc Savage Batman crossover, Brian Azzarello and Phil Noto. It's coming up in November. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide selection of hardbacks, paperbacks, trade editions, absolute editions, omnibus, you name it. You'll find it at discounts of 35% or more off the cover price. And there's plenty of Brian Azzarello product there at InStockTrades.com. You can find volumes of 100 bullets that retail for $19.99, but at InStockTrades.com, just $12.59. Filthy Rich, the Vertical Crime Line book with Victor Santos. The standard retail price, $19.99 at InStockTrades.com. It's just $12.59. Find out more details at their website, InStockTrades.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Don't forget to look for Word Balloon all over the internet. You can find us online at WordBalloon.com. You'll find a great archive of well over 250 interviews with writers, artists, various creators of pop culture content. You'll find it all at WordBalloon.com. Of course, we're at Newsarama, we're at iTunes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or on Facebook. If you have any questions or comments about the show, feel free to reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.